Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt, alongside me, the man, the myth, the legend, Jack Piatelli. Jack, how are we doing?
Doing really well. I'm very relaxed today. I don't know why. I'm usually on edge a little bit, you know.
Is it me?
Yeah, it's you.
Okay.
I'm starting to feel a little more comfortable having to sit next to you, but we've got someone dividing us today, so I think that's the reason why I'm a lot more relaxed today.
Referee.
Yeah. Referee.
It's good. Well, if you listen, we just recorded a podcast where we disparage referees, so it's good to have one. We have Mike Z in studio.
Guys, glad to be here.
Yeah, you'll recognize his byline from laxjournal.com. And, you know, we just worked on the latest issue of the magazine, and it was all preps, man. So if you're into prep lacrosse, this is the right podcast for you.
A lot of preps. I think one of the most impressive issues we put together, Kyle, obviously a lot of work you did on it and some of our other writers. You know, prep schools, high school previews included in this issue, including every state. We've got college features, college coverage. It's a go-to issue for lacrosse fans.
100%. And we're going to start in, I'm comfortable saying it, your wheelhouse and a lot of our listeners' favorite place to go. And Jack, your kids played in it too, right? The ISL.
Yes.
So let's start with kind of the rankings piece that we have for the ISL, which you took point on talking to all the coaches and things like that. I had a minor bit of feedback on some of the rankings, but explain like your process for going through that.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, we do terrific website traffic with the Independent School League. We always have. It's a league that does not get a ton of coverage. We like to provide that coverage. People are interested in reading about it. There's materials that we collected that appear just on the website, not necessarily in the magazine. What we did was reach out to the league's 16 head coaches, like we do every year, touch base with them either through email threads or conversations to get a feeling for what they have coming back this year. New players that might not be on the radar that we should keep an eye out, where the potential strengths and concerns lie in the preseason. And basically we collected all that and boiled that down to a two-part season preview where we featured capsule previews on the teams we predict will finish in the bottom half of the ISL, and then another post on the eight teams that we predict will finish in the top half of the ISL. And obviously we know finishing in the top half of the ISL this year means the first tier playoff, which there's been a lot of talk about and a lot of excitement about.
And we're going to get to that, but let's talk about some of the big players on these teams. We have a couple new coaches in the ISL that you spoke to. I believe Brooks has a new coach.
Not Brooks. There's four new head coaches.
Sorry.
Yeah. And going down the list, St. George's, I know, is one. Roxbury Latin has Mike Higgins as their new coach. St. Mark's has Craig Ferraro. And I'm missing one, and I shouldn't be. And it'll come to me at some point. And also some fairly new coaches.
Tucker Sampson at
Tucker Govs. Sampson at Govs, yes. So, I mean, these are all, obviously, younger guys for the most part, going to bring some energy, going to bring their own college playing experience. To the table, and it should be a good influx of energy for the league.
Yeah, and it's competitive every year. And what I like about the ISL is you have to come and you have to show up and play every single day. Even like 13-7 games could be 9-8 games if you don't come up and show up to play. And with the playoff this year, they've got something to play for, an actual championship. In years past, if you lost a game, there may be another ISL team that goes undefeated, so you don't really have anything to play for. If another team goes 12-1 and you're 12-1, you have co-champions. This year, with the playoff format, They're cutting out some of the regular season games, starting the playoffs early. They'll have 8 teams in the top bracket and 8 teams in the bottom bracket, which if Balmel Hill loses to Govs, they're both in the top bracket, they get to play each other again. So if you lose, not that you want to lose because you want to be in the top 8 bracket, but you have an opportunity to play them again in the playoffs possibly, but the goal is you have something to play for because you want to get in the top 8.
Yes. Yeah, the way that's changed, you know, for years, it was just the, you know, one time around the league, round-robin style, every team plays 15 games. And in some years, those that did produce a terrific race, you know, for the title. I remember, you know, I think one year it was Govs and Belmont Hill both needing results on the last day of the season to share the title. And there's been others like that, too. There's also been years like 2019, the last full season in the ISL, where St. Sebs ran the table and, you know, had no peer, finished 15-0. So what this does is, you know, first of all, it does reduce the number of regular season games in the league. Instead of playing 15, instead of playing everybody once, you're going to play 11. And of those 11 games, you're not going to go more than a year without seeing any one team in the league. But the schedule is going to be weighted a little bit toward, you know, success you've had in seasons past. So organizers feel that this could reduce the number of one-sided games, so it should make the games more exciting. Teams are also, you know, free to add as many, you know, non-league games as they want, so they can go outside the region and you know, get their schedule up to a number that they feel comfortable about. And then, like you mentioned, you have the two-tiered playoff where you have the top 8 teams by record playing a 3-round, you know, knockout tournament to determine the league champion, and then the bottom 8 teams, you know, playing their own three-round tournament to determine an as yet unnamed title. So I'm not sure what that's going to be, but yeah, it should be exciting, and it's going to carry the you know, the excitement all the way through to, you know, just about the end of May.
All right, let's kind of go through a couple teams that are in unique situations. I think up first, let's talk about BM&N a little bit. You know, they have two amazing D1 quality players, both going to the ACC, and Jack Papendick and Thomas Perel. They're ranked really low because we don't really know what the rest of the team is going to bring to the table, but that's a really intriguing duo.
Yeah, we'll clarify that. They're ranked outside the top 8, which is what we did in the two posts on our website. We ranked teams 1 through 8 based on predicted order of finish, and then there were the other 8. So, you know, as much as there's probably a few teams that, you know, are so heavily laden with talent that it's impossible to see them not finishing in the top 8. You might have, beyond those top, say, 3, you might have 9, 10 teams that are legitimately looking to finish in the top 8. And I think BB&N is one of them. You mentioned Papendick and Perel, and you can throw Nico Berger, another senior, in there. The three of them have been, you know, they've been getting minutes since, you know, even some of them as 8th graders. I mean, this is basically, you know, they've grown up with the program. And this is their shot to really go out and make some noise as seniors before they move on to bigger things.
I think they'll surprise some teams. And, you know, that's a incentive, not being ranked in the top 8. So now their incentive is to, you know, we can get to the 8th spot and then get into the top 8 playoff, right? And that's what I like about the playoff situation. Even we can rank all the teams all we want, but they all have to go out and play each other. And it's going to be top 8, bottom 8, and it may come down, Mike, to the last day of the season. There might be 4 teams vying for that 8th spot or that 7th spot. Just to get in that top tier is going to be exciting.
Yeah, and I think you're going to find out that the team that finishes in 8th place in this league, that's going to be a tough out, you know, for that team that finishes first. I mean, you finish 8th in the ISL, that's a good lacrosse team.
Which team would you say, Just based on your conversations with the coaches, is the most likely that we ranked outside the top 8 to get that 8 spot?
Milton.
I actually agree with that. And I've seen a lot of these players play this summer, particularly Mike Hanlon, who plays both ways, is very strong. I saw him play at the IL event. I actually coached him at the IL event. He's an excellent player. You know, they've got guys, you know, Luca Casagrande going to Wesleyan. Wesleyan does not bring in guys that are not going to play. You know, you got another defenseman in Murphy McLaughlin going to BU as well. He's a junior. I think Milton is an excellent case for, if you're looking for the, you know, or if you're using sports terms, the sleeper team. I think it's a great pick.
Yeah, I think it's fair. And I know, you know, Mark Goodrich and I connected, you know, must have been a couple of weeks ago to talk about this team in depth. And, you know, and one of his uncommitted juniors, Ralphie Vogel, you know, junior attack, you know, has the world to say about him. You know, just a great kid who is maybe, you know, so consistent and so good in terms of making the right play instead of the flashy play. And that might be one of the reasons he is not committed yet.
Yeah. Will Lavallee, this is a sophomore, looks like a senior. He is massive. He's a face-off guy, but he also can play midfield, can play both ways. He actually played a little attack in some of the showcases I saw. So that's definitely a great pick for kind of dark horse team, if you want to pick one.
More athletic at that position than I've seen in a long time at that level.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Just so big. Like, you know what I mean? I think from a lot of my experience with these players and these schools is seeing them play for their club teams all summer. Because ISL, we had a couple teams that didn't even field teams last year. So for me, seeing a lot of ISL games, it was tough to get to see those this year. We're gonna change that, do a lot more, especially of the top ISL teams, ones that are ranked nationally. But seeing a lot of these guys playing club, like there's some names on there that I recognize and I remember writing up, and that Milton has a lot of them. So I think, you know, let's go to the top eight now. Okay, we're going to the top eight. Let's go team by team. So we have Middlesex ranked eighth. They only played two games last year. They won them both. They've got some excellent recruits in Orange Alinas, who's the goalie. He's going to Ohio State, high-level recruit. You've got Rex Mabs, who's a senior, going to Swarthmore. And Sam Ray Steiner, who's a senior, he's an attackman. He's going to Bowdoin, play for Coach Maso, one of my favorite guys to actually talk. I'm talking to him this Thursday. Excellent start in the NESCAC for Bowdoin. And then Bo Bensley Jr. is a midfielder who's committed to BU. So obviously this team has a lot of players that are all over the field. It's not just, okay, we have a lot of good defensive players. They have guys that can contribute to all sides. So for you, what kind of did you hear talking to coaches that might separate Middlesex from some of those other teams?
I think Middlesex is maybe the great mystery of the league. Every team played, you know, some sort of a season last year. I believe every team got games in, and most of the, you know, the teams up at the top of the league got in a dozen, give or take. Middlesex got in two league games, mm-hmm. and then got in, after the season, out of league games after the season was over. So, you know, two games in 2 years, you know, so there's obviously talent on this team. And you could tell by the college commits and the players that you've seen, Kyle, on the club circuit.
Yep.
But, you know, how do they play together? You know, do they have that cohesion? Do they have that it factor? Are they deep enough to go up against some of the league's better teams? I think those are questions that we'll see, you know, start to get answered over the next few weeks.
Yeah, we all know this. You may have the best talent on paper, but it's not always the best team. And the best team will win more games.
Yeah. I remember one of the features that I did for the magazine was about the Lakes region. And I remember I was talking specifically to KUA head coach Nick Antall, who played at Notre Dame. And he graduated, I think, 17 seniors. And he was just like, but hey, you know, a lot of those guys, 16 of them went to play in college. And we didn't have a great record. I think we won some games and we lost some games. And he's like, it all comes down to what you can do as a team together and form a cohesive unit. And when I look at ISL, I see all this talent. This league bleeds talent. Everyone knows that. That's one of the reasons that we cover them so much, not just because they're here in New England. You know, there are people nationally that ask me about ISL teams. Like, they're doing rankings, and they're like, well, should I rank them nationally? I'm like, yeah, probably. You know, so I think, you know, that's why we're here. We're doing the podcast to talk about that. And, you know, we have number seven, former guest on the podcast, RJ Swift, Tabor. So they have, I think their most, I don't want to say marketable player, notable player is the best way to put it. Aiden O'Neill, he's a senior. He's an attackman. I've written about him before. Just big, burly, able to get to the goal. Great nose for the goal. He originally committed to Utah and switched to Richmond. It was one of the stories of the offseason. And when I talked to I don't want to call him Coach RJ, but I feel familiar enough that I'll call him Coach RJ. Talking to Coach RJ about him, he just had nothing but good things to say about him. And I know coaches liked him a lot too, even from other teams.
Yeah, he was one of those players mentioned, you know, during our survey when we asked coaches to pick the one opposing player who impresses them the most in the ISL, and he was named on a ballot, as was senior goalie Tim McNamara,
yes,
who's going to Denver. So I mean, at those two ends of the field, you know, you've got standout, you know, blue blood players who can make an impact. And it's funny when you talk about cohesion and Jack and playing as a team and how that's not a given, you know, until you get out there. I mean, I think you see in this league, you know, the biggest difference maybe between the top eight and the bottom eight is depth. You know, you look at those teams up near the top of our rankings and they just have, you know, just waves of players, you know, talented, proven players who are going to come at you. And down at the, you know, the bottom of the rankings, you know, teams do have outstanding players, just not, you know, maybe not as many of them. And depth is really what can separate a very good team from a not a very good team.
Not only will this be the first full season in a couple of years for the ISL, but I believe it'll be the first season they'll have the shot clock for a full season, which makes a difference. To your point, depth is very important. It's going to be a faster game. You know, you're going to have play more midfields. They're going to be up and down the field a lot more often. And I truly believe the difference between the top eight and the bottom eight is goaltending.
Good point. We have covered that in the past. We did an off-season story on some of the outstanding goaltenders in the league. And I think
pretty much
that,
every team has a good goalie,
point,
right?
Yeah, I think every team has someone, you know,
outstanding goalie.
Outstanding goalie, yeah. And I think 10 of them are already, you know, committed, probably most, if not all, to Division I programs. I mean, even, you know, a program like St. George's that doesn't get a lot of press, you know, over the years, as Austin Board will go into Quinnipiac.
Yeah.
You know, so you've got guys who can handle the position, and you know, they're going to have a chance to keep their teams in games.
One of my favorites, just to throw it out there, because I saw him play a bunch, Connor Foley from Thayer, mm-hmm. going to Brown. I watched him play, and there were college coaches around me, and he made a couple saves that were, he's acrobatic. Like, he's an acrobatic goal. He's not big. He's not trying to do crazy stuff, but he does crazy stuff anyway. Like, he makes saves that other goalies kind of don't make. I know McNamara is really good as well. He's, you know, he was heavily sought after. He's a senior on Tabor, but let's move through the ranks. Let's go to Rivers. Coach Justin Walker. Oh, and I believe it's our podcast producer, Steve Safran's school.
Shout out to Rivers.
Shout out to Rivers. Shout out to Saf. Justin Walker runs the Clams program, but also is the head coach here. Looking at his players, the one I recognize immediately off the top is Anthony Stillwell. He is one of those players that is able to get his shot off, like in a hurricane. Like, you could double cover this guy. I watched him play at a New Hampshire showcase up in Plymouth, and he split a double once, and he kept like asking for the double again to do it again. Like, he's that kind of kid, strong lefty, little undersized, but really excellent at getting his shot off. And that's kind of one of the most marketable things to college coaches. He is going to Hobart, which is a commitment that definitely slipped past me, because I was like, this kid's going somewhere, right? And the fact that he's going to Hobart is huge. What else did you learn talking about Rivers with other coaches?
I think most of it, you know, talking to Justin, you know, he likes the team. He thinks it's a very complete team. There's questions about the faceoff. I think that's the one thing that's going to kind of chase them into the season. Can you develop that player or players so you can hang in there, you know, with the possessions, and get a chance to play these top teams. Now, they played, the record was deceiving last year. Yeah. I think we had them at 5-6 is what it was, but you know, they played the heavyweights, and for the most part they played them close. You know, so, you know, those two goal losses to a Nobles or a Belmont Hill, you know, you get the possessions, it can kind of turn that around. So that'll be interesting to watch as this season gets underway for Rivers.
Certainly going to be the key for all the teams is face-offs as well as the goaltending. You know, we've got some very good face-off players on a number of the teams already committed. In terms of Rivers is always well-coached, and they're always ready to play, and they're as competitive as any team in the ISL.
Well, I think also, if we're talking about face-offs, I think that's kind of why I battled for not having Belmont Hill 1. Because that's kind of the one position where they don't have a high-profile commit. But, spoiler alert, they are one. But we're going to go through, and the next team on the docket, we got Thayer. Coach Rubior, can't say enough great things about him. I went to a prep showcase and he was there and he looked over. He goes, "Oh, what are you doing here?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm just writing this up." And he's like, "Oh, well, I didn't know if you were coming. I wouldn't have to come. I'll just read what you wrote." And it's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me in my life. So I was like, "Oh, that's nice." And I, you know, it's been great to kind of develop that relationship. He kind of came in around that pandemic time, and this is one of his first kind of full seasons with the team, aside from last year where it's his team, right? And I think, you know, we already talked about Connor Foley. One of the other guys that I have seen play that is incredible on this team is Tucker Chanichuk. He's an LSM. He's going to Stony Brook. That kid got battled over by college coaches. Many coaches contacted him to get him to try and come to their school. And he picked Stony Brook, who, you know, aside from their America East controversy and CAA move, mm-hmm. Has been excellent this year. I actually really like watching them play. They hung with Cuse for a little bit this past weekend too.
That's a program that it doesn't seem to attract a lot of New England players over the years, like a Stony Brook or an Albany. You look down their rosters and you don't see that presence from this region. So that's an interesting commit.
Yeah. They pull from Connecticut a little bit, but other than that, and it's not, the preps, they'll get like kind of Ridgefield kids and they'll get some Darien kids there. Yeah. But other than that, yeah, it's definitely not a Massachusetts school. I'll say that for sure.
Well, Tucker Chanichuk, his family's from Long Island. His dad, Bruce, played at Hopkins.
Okay.
Bruce Chanichuk. Bruce won 3 national championships at Hopkins, former Boston Blazer, teammate of mine. And Tucker's first cousin, who was a stud at Maryland, is the assistant coach at Stony Brook.
It's explained.
So there's a little connection there.
Yeah, good DNA. Huh?
Very good DNA. Come from a lacrosse family.
And a pro player.
And Bruce Chanichuk's 2 daughters went to ISL schools, I think BBNN, and one went to Dartmouth and one went to Princeton and played. Mm-hmm. So great family, and yeah, Tucker's a heck of a player.
Yeah, and just insert a quick reminder. I mean, we're talking about the boys ISL upcoming season. You know, there will be ISL girls coverage on our website, in our magazine. So keep an eye out for that as we get closer.
Yeah, I would say if you're into that, you're not going to find it a lot of other places. So you should definitely check out LaxJournal.com when that goes up. This is a really good team. I think they will pull an upset at one of these top 4 teams. I think that's in the cards.
They knocked off Sebs last year,
yeah.
If I'm remembering right. I think they split a weekend series
or something like that.
They took a close win and then, you know, got beaten the other thing, if I'm remembering right. But yeah, they have giant killer potential.
Yeah, one of their most explosive players is Nate Austin Johnstone. He's a sophomore. So fast. Just such a quick player. He's a sophomore, but he's going to get a lot of looks this summer.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
The Men's Lacrosse Championships, where speed and power meets precision and creativity. And they give it everything they got, from face-off to the final whistle. Go big for every goal. Go beyond your limits and enter the NCAA universe. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, May 28th through 30th at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, Connecticut. Get your seats today at ncaa.com/mlacrosse.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits,
prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
All right, let's move on to Govs. Govs has the most impactful transfer, if you want to call him that. It's kind of a retransfer back in Owen Umansky, who's a faceoff guy, who he's a junior. Last year, he won the state championship with St. John's Prep and was one of, if not the best faceoff guy in Division I.
And you saw him quite a bit.
I did. I watched him a lot, and he is very good. I actually had coaches ask me about him, and I was like, he's a stud. You know, it's between him and one of the players on Sweetlax is probably one of the faceoff guy from Sweetlax, who I'm not recalling right off the top of my head. It goes to Salisbury. He's excellent. But Umansky is as coaches like to say, he's a dude. He's a guy that's just going to mix it up. And he's also really great at getting the ball up and out and creates transition. Really was excellent in the championship game and the games leading up to it. And now he actually started at Govs and then went out and played at St. John's Prep and then went back to Govs. Okay. So he's an interesting guy. The other guy on here that really sticks out, jumps out to me, that I saw play, I think I described him when I wrote him up as one of the meanest long pulls I've ever seen, and it's Ben Baroni. He's an LSM defender. He's going to Villanova. He played for Tomahawks. I watched him play in the UMass tournament, and there was kind of like one of those whistle situations where no one was sure where the whistle went off, and he didn't care. He just took the stick out of the kid's hand. The ball went flying.
He's nasty.
He's mean. I like him. I like that, though, right? You want a little dog.
He plays with an edge.
Yeah, 100% does. 100% does. And he's going to fit right into that culture at Villanova of developing that long stick position and being a really good player.
And that position doesn't get enough credit, to be honest with you.
It's actually, so I have this theory, and I've said this to a bunch of people. Face-off is the position that's changed the most. The position that's changed the second most is LSM in the past 10 years. It is a complete and total change in how it's utilized by teams and their impact on games. Now you have offensive LSMs and defensive LSMs. Offensive LSMs didn't exist until, Scott Ratliff, from Loyola in like 2012 when they made that run and won the championship. It was before that a little bit, like Brody Merrill was probably one of them as well at Georgetown. But that kind of player that can pick up the ball and get it upfield, you now have to be able to do that if you're an LSM. Whereas in the past, you could just be a really fast, nasty defenseman that likes to get up and down the field. Now you have to have stick skills. You have to have the ability to pick the ball up and make something happen. You have to be able to clear the ball. You have to be able to play on the wing on faceoffs. You know, that people double pull faceoffs now. It's not a crazy thing. Triple pull. I've seen it. We ran it before. It's insane to substitute. But that's the kind of position when you have a player that can impact the middle of the field constantly on both sides of the ball. Maybe he's not on the offensive set, but he's getting that ball to the offense, coming down, setting a pick, and being involved for at least 10 seconds before he gets off. And that's kind of a college trait that started about 5 years ago. It's now trickled down into places like the ISL.
Couldn't agree more. And that player also has to have a good understanding of the offense and the defense.
Yes.
You know, which a few years back, they were really defensive guys more than offensive guys. And it is amazing. You watch these high school players playing that position, and the skill set they have is tremendous.
I think it's totally different.
Oh, that's what I mean. Yeah, I mean, it's come so far.
It's incredible.
It really is.
And it starts at a younger age now, so they're even better than they've ever been. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, Steve Moreland left, went to Tufts. That was an exclusive story that we broke at LaxJournal.com. Tucker Sampson steps in. He's the assistant there for a while. I think you know him, Jack. Excellent leader, excellent player when he played. And he's going to step into a situation where he's got a good team. Like, this team is, he helped build it. They know him. He's got an easier transition, I think, than some of these other coaches.
No question about it. Very enthusiastic guy. Just a really solid human being. Knows the game very well. no ego, great communicator. You know, and working with Steve Moreland, I consider one of the best coaches around on the offensive end of the field. He learned a lot working with Steve Moreland. And to your point, I think he's going to do a very good job with this team.
That's one thing he said when we talked. You know, don't expect huge changes. You know, he goes back to Andover with Steve. So they've been, I think they were together on a coaching staff for almost a decade.
Yeah.
If not a decade, the only new coach in our quote top eight in the preseason. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But it sounds like there's going to be a lot of continuity, and the governor's team we see this year is not going to look a whole lot different than the ones we've seen in the past.
I think the real difference is they're going to be just better at the faceoff X.
Yep.
And that's a huge, huge thing. And that's why we have number four. But let's move to number three. Our buddy, my buddy, Matt Rowley, the coach here at Nobles. Nobles in Greenough. Which I hate typing out because I spell corrects to something else every single time. I don't know if you have that problem. Does it? What is it correct to for you?
It's not a word you type out a lot in this business, Greenough.
Yeah, you just say Nobles, and everyone knows who you're talking about, and everyone knows Matt Rowley. So, you know, for me, looking at this roster, obviously Chad Palumbo is and Brody Upton are amazing. Like, these are really good players. They're both going to Princeton. I've seen them play this summer. Excellent, like, ability to score, and also team players. Like, they set picks, they get open, they slip, you know, they space the field well. I think that's kind of, you know, I think when you were talking to coaches, they said that this team's offense is just crazy.
Right? Yeah, that's the remark I got from several coaches, is that this is a crazy offense. This is crazy good with Upton and Palumbo and McClements and, you know, and all these players. They're going to put some goals on the board.
A lot of their goals are going to be assisted.
Yes.
And yes. That's really going to make a difference.
Yeah, we should say, you know, Matt Rowley, one of the guys at 3D New England, you know, there's a lot of similarity in how they play versus how Nobles play. There's not a coincidence, you know what I mean? And I think that goes back to Walker as well at Rivers, Coach being the Clems coach. Like, there's similarities in how, you know, the philosophy of the coach comes through in what they put on the field. And, you know, with Nobles, it's a lot of sharing the ball, getting open, moving off ball. And I think that's what really makes a good offense at any level, but particularly in the ISL, where you have really stud defenders that lock down number one guys, right? Like, that's one of the things that makes the league very competitive, very high level, is you have these stud defenders that can just take guys out of games. They've also got another, we're talking about goalies again, Matt Tully. Awesome. And where's he going, Jack?
He's going to Cornell, Big Red.
That's right. Go Big Red. He's one of your guys, right?
Yeah, he's not only an outstanding goalie, but really a outstanding young man. Works his tail off in the classroom. His craft. He's always working on his craft. And he plays hockey at Nobles. He was on the varsity hockey team as a freshman and lacrosse team since his freshman year. So he's a game changer, no question about it. I had a conversation with Matt Rowley last week, and he was the gentleman or the coach that mentioned, you know, he's really excited to coach this year. Not only are they going to have a full season, but, you know, they're going to have a lot to play for this year, you know, with the playoffs. And it's going to be great for the league, he said, because there's going to be a lot of people watching these kids play. You know, these kids really haven't had a showcase or, like, the state champion. This is going to be, you know, everyone knows about it. Coaches are going to come watch these kids play, regular fans, and they're going to watch great lacrosse.
Yeah, I think that's something a lot of you know, the public schools players got to experience last year on the really great teams. They got to get into those playoffs, and Kyle, you knew what the atmosphere was like for St. John's Prep. BC High, you were there both days.
Yeah, yep.
So yeah, I think you'd see kind of an atmosphere like that. I remember you know, Belmont Hill was not able to have fans at games for the longest time until their last game of the season. And their coach, Tim Sullivan, was telling me just what an incredible atmosphere it was. And that will become the norm this year. And when we get to this playoff and some of these matchups, you know, watch out. It's going to be fantastic.
It really is. And I had a chance to watch Concord Kyle play Long Meadow last year in the championship. And just being in that arena, that stadium with the fans, and you see all the kids running around with sticks and people, it was just a great game, and you're going to see three or four fantastic games. I wouldn't be surprised if a number of the games come down to the wire.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the number two team, St. Sebastian's. A little Sebs action. Coach Adam White, who I'm going to do a free pub for Coach Adam White, who has a book coming out in June that he very kindly, and the publisher very kindly, sent me an advanced copy of it called The Midcoast. It's actually really great. It's got a little lacrosse in it. If you're from New England, it's actually a really great read because you can almost smell New England in the book. That's kind of the compliment I'm going to give it. So I'm going to pub Coach, who's an English teacher at Sebs as well. I'm going to pub his book a little bit. But let's talk about his team. So I think one of the guys that stands out here, you know, they have an excellent faceoff guy in Jack Rideout. I think that was kind of one of my tiebreakers for, hey, this guy might, you know, Sebs might be number one, and they are. I think they're ranked in the top 25 nationally. But Ben Fersoli is incredible. PJ McKee is incredible. There is not a bad player on this list of commits at all, and not that there would be. I mean, Aiden McGuire is going to Duke. Cormac Wright's going to Colby. He's a midfielder. Colorado College, Tim Brown, he's a senior. You could just go up and down, and this is just a fully loaded team, and a lot, not just seniors, a lot of good juniors as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of players that we saw, you know, last year playing that, like, this team got in a dozen games, you know, went 8-4, which, you know, maybe a little surprising based on what we thought we had with them coming into the season. So yeah. I think there's going to be a lot of motivation for this Sebs team, you know, especially when, you know, when Belmont Hill's on the schedule or any of these other big, big teams. And yeah, and you know, they're a talented team and a, you know, Renaissance man as coach. He's writing a book. He's teaching English. He's, you know, creating a playoff. You know, he's doing it all off the field as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, Coach White played at Dartmouth, obviously understands the game very well. X's and O's guy, knows the game as well as anybody. And one of the things about St. Sebastian's, if you look at their roster, is they're very athletic. They have a number of multi-sport athletes. So they're going to be able to run up and down the field. And that's going to be the challenge for some of the other teams, is just to be able to stay with them on the field and be able to play with them and run with them, because they are very athletic and they have a very good face-off guy, which I would probably say Jack is probably the best face-off guy in the league. Yeah. And he started as a freshman.
Yeah.
And he was very good as a freshman.
I would say Umansky is right there with him, but yeah, he is top kind of returner to the league. But I watched a lot of these guys. I watched Rideout a little bit too. He is committed to Michigan. Excellent, and I know they're excited to have him. He's a senior. This team, it's just, again, we talk about depth. This is a team with lots of depth, lots of talent, and well-managed. You know, Coach White, I've seen him coach. He doesn't scream the whole game. He is very organized. He is ready to go, and it looks like it's fun to play at Sebs, right?
It is, and they win a lot, so it makes it a lot more fun. You know, if you win, it's fun. But he is. He's very calm. He's very cool on the sideline. He never panics. He always has a plan. And he manages the game very well. Makes adjustments if he has to. And he's done a great job.
Yeah. Just make a note. One concern he did mention, you know, going into the season was the attack being very young.
Yep.
You know, really going to need to develop some players there. So if there's any, you know, potential, you know, drawback in this team reaching the potential that you see for them, you know, at the start, at least, maybe that's it.
I wouldn't be surprised to see one of these midfielders just go down and ride the ship if that's the case. You know, I think they're intelligent enough and able enough to really make that transition. Several of these midfielders that are going to power schools. I mean, we got a lot of NESCAC on here. We got, you know, their goalie, Ryan Williams, is going to Dartmouth. He's a junior. So it's definitely, you know, something to watch. But let's get to the number one pick that we already spoiled. And my fault, mea culpa. Belmont Hill, ranked number one, went 12-1 last year. Tim Sullivan, the coach. Adam Figler is a player that I've watched several times. Very good. Able to get really good separation on his guy. Just going through, Eli Goldstein is also excellent. He's a junior midfielder. He's committed to Dartmouth. You know, they've got Charlie Hazard, who's a D guy, going to Hopkins. How many guys other than Jimmy Ayers are going to Hopkins from Massachusetts? Almost none of them. That kind of speaks to his quality, because they go everywhere. You know, there's a lot of really excellent players on this team. I see why they're number one. Again, it is kind of, faceoffs are a concern, but if you have an offense this prolific and this able to score goals and a defense that can hold other teams under 10, that's why they're one. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a big reason. I mean, this program has a track record. You know, no champion was crowned last year, but they ran the table in the games that they played, including, I believe, three, wins against Sebs in three tries, in Nobles as well. So it just seems like the Belmont Hill, it's the story every year. The kids grow up, and all of a sudden you've got a fantastic senior class. When have they never had a great senior class? You know, it's just been, it seems like it's been a long time. These players grow into roles. They grow into leadership roles. New players come up, and, you know, Tim puts out a quality team on the field, and they win.
Yeah, it's one of the largest schools in the ISL, so they have a great numbers in their program. Not only great numbers, but great players. And a lot of these players don't get a chance to play until their junior, in some cases their senior year. But by the time they get on the field, you never they don't miss a step. There is competitive every year for the last 7 or 8 years because they just fill with these younger players who develop for a couple of years and they never miss a step.
Right. And let's kind of just talk real quick about where we put the ISL teams in our overall prep rankings, right? So we have Belmont Hill is the highest, I believe, at number 5. We've got a lot of these, you know, Founders League, Western Mass guys. We have Brunswick 1, Salisbury 2, Deerfield 3, Taft 4, and then Belmont Hill.
And Sebs right behind them at 6.
And Sebs at 6.
And Nobles is in there as well.
Nobles in there as well. I think, you know, and I fought for Lakes Region teams just because, you know, they're excellent. That's actually the feature of the magazine. But going through, I think we probably could have ranked, I think we had a conversation about it, where we could have ranked, you know, we could have ranked Govs, could have ranked there. And I think as the season goes and we update these rankings,
which we will,
I would not be surprised to see more ISL teams in the top 10, especially, you know, these teams at the top are going to take games off each other. And that's kind of gonna affect where they land. You know, Taft, Deerfield, Salisbury, Brunswick, a lot of those teams are playing each other. So, you know, we're going to see somewhat of an attrition there. And I think if there's an ISL team that makes a strong run, even early, they're gonna rise.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously differences between the leagues. I mean, you look at those top four teams you ticked off. You know, a lot of postgraduate players there. Mm-hmm. You know, a little older. You know, they've made their commitments. They know where they're going. No PGs in the ISL. And you got a taste of it last year. You know, Belmont Hill was clearly the class of the ISL. Late in the year, they played Deerfield and competitive for a while, and then Deerfield just kind of, you know, outclassed them, pulled away. So you make a note of that. Deerfield was outstanding last year. We wrote about them. I expect them to be very good again this year. But yeah, you know, there's ISL teams waiting to move up if they get their chance. If they're impressive early on, you know, we'll see some shakeup in those preseason rankings.
Yeah, it's interesting that the hockey ISL Founders League, or they have a New England lacrosse championship. Mm-hmm. After the end of the season, it would be great if you got the, you know, the top two teams from New Hampshire, top two teams from Connecticut, two teams from the ISL at the end of the year, have like a New England showdown. That would be very, very exciting. And you know, we wouldn't have to rank them.
We'd rank them anyway, but yeah, that's the drawback of spring sports, yeah, right? You just don't have the time. In the fall, you have soccer is great. I got to attend that this year, and certainly the hockey and the basketball in the winter are must-see events. And in spring, it's, you know, you just kind of play your league, and you know, if you're fortunate enough, like a select few teams, you're in some kind of a national, you know, end-of-season tournament, and, you know, and the rest of it is just us watching and wondering.
Subtle reminder that the MIAA played until July 3rd last year. So, you know, you pick your spots where you can get them. Let's talk about some of the other, and we've talked about a lot of these guys already, but, you know, we got a lot of coaches giving feedback on certain players. Who was the kind of number one guy that came out of different coaches' mouths for you?
Yeah, what we did, I'll just explain for readers, is we did send out a coaches survey to all 16 coaches in the ISL, and one of the questions we asked them is which opposing player impresses you the most. It's a feature we started last year, got great feedback, got a number of different players named. I think Ronan Doherty, who's at Notre Dame now from Groton School, was the one who was named the most, I believe, three times, and this year the one who was named the most was Chad Palumbo from Nobles, who was named by three other coaches, and you have the comments right in front of you.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, Tucker Sampson saying he does ridiculous things on attack, combination of athleticism and skill is right up there, best players in the country. I mean, you know, one of the reasons that Noble's offense is going to get talked about is Chad Palumbo. You know, he's a pure scorer. You know, the words of Mike Derenberger from BBNN, a pure scorer. And then RJ Swift, you know, as good as it gets in our league, he has size and skill. I mean, I feel like people don't understand that it's hard to pull these out of coaches. it's not easy to get them to say that these other players are good because they are focused on their own team. But I think it's very telling that when they choose which player to say it about, they have to mean it. You know, they're not saying it to like, be like, oh, get, you know, we're going to get an advantage if we say this kid's good or whatever. Like, they mean it. Like, it is very much a up and down, above board kind of comment to be like, this guy is really good. And other coaches, not all coaches are like that. Some of the coaches, most of the coaches in the ISL are where they'll make a comment. But I think if you asked every single one of them off record, honestly, like, who's the best, I don't think this changes. Right?
Yeah, I think it's a good mix. I think when it was all over, we had 14 of the 16 coaches, you know, were pressed to give an answer. One who didn't was a new coach without maybe the familiarity of the league, and the other just didn't feel comfortable, you know, talking about players that weren't his own. But we had, I believe, 10 different players named by those 14 coaches. Something, was it 10 from six different schools or something like that? There were...
It's a large amount.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of schools represented, a lot of players represented. And it's funny that you mentioned... You know, what coaches are thinking when they're talking about that. If you go down to the second player on the list, Jack Rideout, who we've talked about from Sebs,
yep.
You know, the face-off guy to watch in this league, you know, one of the coaches who named him is somebody who's probably going to be thinking a lot about those face-offs when they play, you know, in one of the most anticipated matches of the season, and that's Tim Sullivan from Belmont Hill. He knows what Jack can do.
Yeah, and, you know, again, with a league with 16 teams in it, there's just... As someone that I cover extensively, the NESCAC. The ISL reminds me of the NESCAC because there's so many teams. Nobody is really bad, right? Like, yes, there are teams that are better. They're tiered higher. They have better, you know, better depth, better ability to score, better ability to stop other people from scoring. But you're not walking to wins in the ISL all that often, right?
No, no question about it. Milton. St. Mark's, you know, they're competitive. The one thing I would say about the ISL is these players, they're all smart players. And I think the difference between number one through number eight and eight through 16 is depth and skill set and maybe size. But in terms of IQ, they're all good coaches. All the players understand the game. But the skill set, athleticism and depth is really the difference. And it's interesting, like some of these coaches say, oh, Belmont coach thinks the faceoff guy, Jack, is one of the best players because he doesn't have right now, he's got a young faceoff guy. But if you don't have a good goalie, does that mean Matt Tully's the best player in the league?
Yeah.
Because you don't match up? How are we working?
It could
that?
Be. I don't know if we want to interpret it more than what Tim said. I think he's just impressed by Jack Rideout.
You know, yeah,
he saw him a lot last year.
No question about it.
He likes the way he plays.
It'll be very interesting because they have a player of the year every year. It'll be very interesting to see, you know, who that player is at the end of the season. And we've mentioned, you know, a number of players today, 10, 12 players. And I think any of those 12 players could be the player of the year in the ISL.
Yeah, and it's funny, and you talk about how there's no walks. I mean, there's no easy games, and now with just 11 games on the regular season schedule, you even
forget about
less than before, you can't take teams for granted. You cannot, you know, lay an egg against this team that you should be, you know, beating because it's going to cost you down the stretch. Every game becomes even bigger.
All right, everyone's on a hot seat. Are we ready? Who's winning the ISL in the first playoff ever? Who's winning? Jack, who you got?
I think it's going to come down to Governors and St. Sebastian's in the championship game.
Wow.
But I think Governors will win.
Wow. Look at you. Why?
Because I think they have one of the best players in the league. And same system. New coach, but he's been there for a long time. Mm-hmm. They play fast. They're always skilled. Face-off guys coming back. And that's a key. I'm telling you, face-offs are such a key. And I think the best two face-off guys in the league are going to be playing for the ISL championship.
Wow. All in on face-off guys. Dude, do you want to go or you want me to go?
I'll go.
Okay.
I'll throw out an idea. And again, I'm not predicting this, you know, through the eyes of an analyst like you guys who, you know the sport inside and out. I'm an editor. I'm a reporter, you know, so I go by the information I have. I'll tell you one team that's going to get to the finals that maybe isn't expected, and that's Thayer.
Wow.
I think they've shown the ability to, you know, to pull off the big win. I think they're going to pull a notable upset in that top eight bracket. They're going to get there, and they're going to knock off someone that maybe people don't see coming. But on the spot, you're going to ask me who's going to win the league, and I'm going to say Belmont Hill. I just think the track record over the years, the fact that they have so many seniors playing in key positions, they look very complete. I think they'll get better as the year goes on. And they're the de facto defending champs. So I'm going to stick with Bell Hill, and we'll see where it goes.
All right. I did this to myself. I hate making picks. Everyone knows. For me, I just think I love offense. I do. So I think it's Nobles and Sebs. Mm-hmm. And I am going to pick Sebs to win it because of the depth. Not because of anything else. I really think it's depth. And like Jack said, the other great faceoff guy, right? I really think that that's a huge difference in this league. I think they have an excellent goalie. You know, yes, they're young at attack, but guess what? If you can score in the two-man with midfielders, a lot of high school lacrosse is midfielders, man. If you've got the horses and you can run, you run.
But if you have the ball 60% of the time, 70% of the time, your chances are greater to outscore the other team.
And they have both. So kind of reinforce them. I get it. And I know the Belmont Hill parents are going to be upset with me, but they already send me mean emails anyway. So that's okay. They can be upset how they want. I think that might actually do it for us. How many, you guys have any other input, any thoughts you want to throw into the ISL preview here?
Yeah, I'll just remind people that we'll be covering this league and others throughout the season, both at laxjournal.com, fresh content daily, heavy on prep and high school coverage, some college, and also in the editions of the magazine. So, come to us. You know, it doesn't end here. This is just the beginning. We're going to be on this league throughout. We're going to have a lot of exciting features, rankings, watch lists, keep it here all spring long.
Great job. Looking forward to it. It's going to be fun to watch.
All right. Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli and Mike Z, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.